Men and women are so quiet now the square might as well be empty. The war is over, the mayor continues, and a new peace will take its place. He points to the sky. People look up, like he might be conjuring something up there to fall on them. You may have heard a rumor, he says, that there are new settlers coming. My stomach twists again. I tell you as your president, he says. The rumor is true. How does he know? How does he, Ruddy, know? The crowd starts to murmur at this news, men and women. The mayor lets them, happily talking over them. We will be ready to greet them, he says. We will be a proud society, ready to welcome them into a new Eden. His voice is rising again. We will show them that they have left old world and entered paradise. Lots more murmuring now, talking everywhere. I am going to take your cure away from you, the mayor says, and boy, does the murmuring stop. The mayor lets it, lets the silence build up, and then he says, for now. The men look at one another and back to the mayor. We are entering a new era, Mayor Prentice says. You will earn my trust by joining me in creating a new society. As that new society is built, and as we meet our first challenges and celebrate our first successes, you will earn the right to be called men again. You will earn the right to have your cure returned to you, and that will be the moment all men truly will be brothers. He's not looking at the women. Neither are the men in the crowd. Women got no use for the reward of a cure, do they? It will be difficult, he continues. I don't pretend otherwise. But it will be rewarding. He gestures toward the army. My deputies have already begun to organize you. You will continue to follow their instructions, but I assure you, they will never be too onerous, and you will soon see that I am not your conqueror. I am not your doom. I am not, he pauses again, your enemy. He turns his head across the crowd of men one last time. I am your savior, he says. And even without hearing their noise, I watch the crowd wonder if there's a chance he's telling the truth. If maybe things will be okay after all. If maybe, despite what they feared, they've been let off the hook. You ain't, I think, not by a long shot. Even before the crowds have started to properly leave after the mayor's finished, there's a kerthunk at my door. Good evening, Todd, the mayor says, stepping into the bell-ringing jail and looking around him, wrinkling his nose a little at the smell. Did you like my speech? How do you know there are settlers coming? I say. Have you been talking to her? Is she all right? He don't answer this, but he don't hit me for it neither. He just smiles and says, all in good time, Todd. We hear noise coming up the stairs outside the door.
Alive! I'm alive! It says. Alive! Alive! Alive!
And into the room comes Mayor Ledger, pushed by Mr. Collins. He pulls up his step when he sees Mayor Prentice standing there. New bedding will arrive tomorrow, Mayor Prentice says, still looking at me. As will toilet privileges. Mayor Ledger's moving his jaw, but it takes a few tries before any words come out. Mr. President, Mayor Prentice ignores him. Your first job will also begin tomorrow, Todd. Job, I say. Everyone has to work, Todd, he says. Work is the path to freedom. I will be working. So will Mr. Ledger. I will, Mayor Ledger says. But we're in jail, I say. He smiles again, and there's more amusement in it, and I wonder how I'm about to be stung. Get some sleep, he says. Step into the door, and looking me in the eye. My son will pick you up first thing in the morning.
3. The New Life. But it turns out it ain't Davy that worries me when I get dragged into the cold of the next morning in front of the cathedral. It ain't even Davy I look at. It's the horse.
Boy called,
it says, shifting from hoof to hoof, looking down at me, eyes wide in that horse craziness, like I need a good stomping. I don't know nothing about horses, I say. She's from my private herd, Mayor Prentice says, atop his own horse, Morpeth.
Her name is Angharad, and she will treat you well, Todd.
Morpeth is looking at my horse, and all he's thinking is,
submit, submit, submit,
making my horse even more nervous, and that's a ton of nervous animal I'm supposed to ride.
What's the matter?
Davy Prentice sneers from the saddle of a third horse.
You scared?
What's the matter? I say. Daddy not give you the cure yet? His noise immediately rises.
You little piece of...
My, my, says the mayor. Not 10 words in, and the fight's already begun.
He started it, Davy says.
And he would finish it too, I wager, says the mayor, looking at me, reading the red, jittery state of my noise, filled with urgent red askins about Viola, with more askins I want to take out of Davy Prentice's hide. Come, Todd, the mayor says, reining his horse. Ready to be a leader of men? It's a simple division, he says, as we trot through the early morning, way faster than I'd like. The men will move to the west end of the valley in front of the cathedral, and the women to the east behind it. We're riding east down the main street of New Prentice Town, the one that starts at the zigzag road by the falls, carries through to the town square and around the cathedral, and now out the back into the farther valley. Small squads of soldiers march up and down side roads, and the men of New Prentice Town come past us the other way on foot, carrying rucksacks and other luggage.
I don't see no women, Davy says.
Any women, corrects the mayor. And no, Captain Morgan and Captain Tate supervised the transfer of the rest of the women last night.
What are you going to do with them?
I say, my knuckles gripping so hard on the saddle horn they're turning white. He looks back at me. Nothing, Todd. They will be treated with the care and dignity that befits their importance to the future of New World. He turns away. But for now, separate is best.
You put the bitches in their place, Davy sneers.
You will not speak that way in front of me, David, the mayor says, calmly, but in a voice that ain't joking. Women will be respected at all times and given every comfort. Though in a non-vulgar sense, you are correct. We all have places. New World made men forget theirs. And that means men must be away from women until we all remember who we are, who we were meant to be. His voice brightens a little.
The people will welcome this. I offer clarity where before there was only chaos.
Is Viola with the women? I ask. Is she okay?
He looks back at me again. You made a promise, Todd Hewitt, he says. Need I remind you once more?
Just save her and I'll do anything you want, I believe were your exact words.
I lick my lips nervously.
How do I know you're keeping your end of the bargain?
You don't, he says, his eyes on mine, like he's peering right past every lie I could tell him. I want your faith in me, Todd. And faith with proof is no faith at all. He turns back down the road, and I'm left with Davy snickering to my side, so I just whisper,
"Oh, girl,"
to my horse. Her coat is dark brown with a white stripe down her nose, and a mane brush so nice, I'm trying not to grab onto it, lest it make her mad.
Boy colt,
she thinks.
She,
I think.
She.
Then I think an asking I ain't never had a chance to ask before. 'Cause the ewes I had back on the farm had noise too. And if women ain't got noise...
Because women are not animals, the mayor says, reading me. No matter what anyone claims, I believe.
They are merely naturally noiseless. He lowers his voice, which makes them different. It's mostly shops that line this part of the road, dotted twixt all the trees, closed, reopening who knows when, with houses stretching back from side streets both toward the river on the left and the hill of the valley on the right. Most of the buildings, if not all, are built a fair distance from one another, which, I suppose, is how you'd plan a big town before you found a cure for the noise. We pass more soldiers marching in groups of 5 or 10, more men heading west with their belongings, still no women. I look at the faces of the men going by, most of them pointed to the road at their feet, none of them looking ready to fight. "Oh, girl," I whisper again, 'cause riding a horse is turning out to be powerfully uncomfortable on your private parts. "And there's Todd," Davy says, pulling up next to me, "moaning already." "Shut it, Davy," I say.
"You will address each other as Mr. Prentice Jr. and Mr. Hewitt,"
the mayor calls back to us. "What?" Davy says, his noise rising. "He ain't a man yet. He's just..." The mayor silences him with a look. "A body was discovered in the river in the early hours of this morning," he says. "A body with many terrible wounds to its flesh and a large knife sticking out of its neck. A body dead not more than 2 days." He stares at me, looking into my noise again. I put up the pictures he wants to see, making my imagining seem like the real thing, 'cause that's what noise is. It's everything you think, not just the truth. And if you think hard enough that you did something, well then, maybe you actually did. Davy scoffs. "You killed Preacher Aaron? I don't believe it." The mayor don't say nothing, just moves Morpeth along a little faster. Davy sneers at me, then kicks his own horse to follow.
"Follow,"
Morpeth nickers.
"Follow."
Davy's horse whinnies back.
"Follow,"
thinks my own horse, taking off after them, bouncing me even worse. As we go, I'm on a constant lookout for her, even though there's no chance of seeing her. Even if she's still alive, she'd still be too sick to walk. And if she weren't too sick to walk, she'd be locked up with the rest of the women. But I keep looking, 'cause maybe she escaped. Maybe she's looking for me. Maybe she's... And then I hear it.
"I am the circle, and the circle is me."
Clear as a bell, right inside my head, the voice of the mayor, twining around my own voice, like it's speaking directly into my noise, so sudden and real I sit up and nearly fall off my horse. Davy looks surprised, his noise wondering what I'm reacting to. But the mayor just rides on down the road like nothing happened at all. The town gets less shiny the farther east we get from the cathedral, and soon we're riding on gravel. The buildings get plainer, too. Long wooden houses set at a distance from each other, like bricks dropped into clearings of trees. Houses that radiate the silence of women. "Quite correct," the mayor says. "We are entering the new women's quarter." My heart starts to clench as we go past, the silence rising up like a grasping hand. I try to sit up higher on my horse, 'cause this is where she'd be. This is where she'd be healing. Davy rides up next to me again, his pathetic, half-there mustache bending into an ugly smile. "I'll tell you where your whore is," his noise says. Mayor Prentice spins around in his saddle, and there's the weirdest flash of sound from him, like a shout but quiet and away from me, not in the world at all, like a million words all said together, so fast I swear I feel my hair brush back like in a wind. But it's Davy who reacts. His head jerks back like he's been hit, and he has to catch his horse's reins so he don't fall off, spinning the horse round, his eyes wide and dazed, his mouth open and some drool dripping out. "What the hell?" "He doesn't know, Todd," the mayor says. "Anything his noise tells you about her is a lie." I look at Davy, still dazed and blinking with pain, then back to the mayor.
"Does that mean she's safe?"
"It means he doesn't know. Do you, David?"
"No, Pa,"
says Davy's noise, still shaky. Mayor Prentice raises his eyebrows. I see Davy clench his teeth.
"No, Pa,"
he says out loud. I know my son is a liar, the mayor says. I know he is a bully and a brute and ignorant of the things I hold dear. But he is my son. He turns back down the road. And I believe in redemption. Davy's noise is quiet as we follow on, but there's a dark red seething in it. New Prentice Town fades in the distance, and the road becomes almost free of buildings. Farm fields start showing up red and green through the trees and up the hills with crops I recognize and others I don't. The silence of the women starts to ease a little, and the valley becomes a wilder place. Flowers growing in the ditches and waxy squirrels chattering insults to each other, and the sun shining clear and cool like nothing else was going on. At a bend in the river, we curve round a hill, and I see a large metal tower poking out of the top of it, stretching up into the sky. What's that? I say. Wouldn't you like to know? Davy says, though it's obvious he don't know neither. The mayor don't answer. Just past the tower, the road bends again and follows a long stone wall emerging out of the trees. Down a little farther, the wall connects to a big arched gate with a huge set of wooden doors. It's the only opening in the long, long wall I see. The road beyond is dirt, like we've come to the end. New World's first and last monastery, the mayor says, stopping at the gate. Built as a refuge of quiet contemplation for our holiest of men. Built when there was still faith we could beat the noise germ through self-denial and discipline. His voice goes hard. Abandoned before it was even properly finished. He turns to face us. I hear a strange spark of happiness rising in Davy's noise. Mayor Prentice gives him a warning look. You're wondering, he says to me, why I appointed my son as your overseer. I cast a look over to Davy, still smiling away. You need a firm hand, Todd, the mayor says. Your thoughts even now are of how you might escape at the first opportunity and try to find your precious Viola. Where is she? I say, knowing I won't get no answer. And I have no doubt, the mayor continues, that David here will be quite a firm hand for you indeed. Davy's face and noise both smirk. And in return, David will learn what real courage looks like. Davy's smirk vanishes. He will learn what it's like to act with honor, what it's like to act like a real man, what it's like, in short, to act like you, Todd Hewitt. He gives his son a last glance and then turns Morpeth in the road. I shall be exceedingly eager to hear how your first day together went. Without another word, he sets off back to New Prentice Town. I wonder now why he came in the first place. Surely he's got more important things to do. Surely I do, the mayor calls, not turning back. But don't underestimate yourself, Todd. He rides off. Davy and I wait till he's well out of hearing distance. I'm the one who speaks first. Tell me what happened to Ben, or I'll rip your effing throat out. I'm your boss, boyo, Davy says, smirking again, jumping off his horse and throwing his rucksack to the ground. Best treat me with respect or Pa ain't gonna... But I'm already off Angharad and hitting him as hard as I can in the face, aiming right for that sad excuse for a mustache. He takes the punch but comes back fast with his own. I ignore the pain. He does, too, and we fall to the ground in a heap of fists and kicks and elbows and knees. He's still bigger than me, but only just... Only in a way that don't feel like much of a difference no more, but still enough so that after a bit, he's got me on my back with his forearm pressed into my throat. His lips bleeding, so's his nose, the same as my own poor face, but that ain't concerning me now. Davy reaches behind him and pulls a pistol from a holster strapped to his back. Ain't no way your pa's gonna let you shoot me, I say. Yeah, he says, but I still got a gun. And you don't. Ben beat you, I grunt underneath his arm. He stopped you on the road. We got away from you. He didn't stop me, Davy sneers. I took him prisoner, didn't I? And I took him back to Pa, and Pa let me torture him. Let me torture him right to death. and Davy's noise. I can't say what's in Davy's noise. He's a liar. He's a liar! But it makes me strong enough to push him away. We fight more, Davy fending me off with the butt of his gun till finally, with an elbow to his throat, I knock him down. You remember that, boy? Davy says, coughing, gun still gripped. When my pa says all those nice things about you, he's the one who had me torture your Ben. You're a liar, I say. Ben beat you!
Oh, yeah? Davy says. Where is he now, then? Coming to rescue you?
I step forward, my fists up, 'cause of course, he's right, ain't he? My noise surges with the loss of Ben, like it's happening all over again right here. Davy's laughing, scrambling back away from me till he's against the huge wooden door. My pa can read you, he says, then his eyes widen into a taunt. Read you like a book. My noise gets even louder. You give me that book, or I swear I'll kill you.
You ain't gonna do nothing to me, Mr. Hewitt, Davy says, rising, his back still against the door. You wouldn't want to put your beloved bitch at risk, now would you?
And there it is. They know they got me, 'cause I won't put her in no more danger. My hands are ready to do more damage to Davy Prentice, like they did before when he hurt her, when he shot her. But they won't now, even though they could, 'cause he's weak, and we both know it. Davy's smile drops. Think you're special, do you? He spits. Think Pa's got a treat for you? I clench my fists, unclench them, but I keep my place. Pa knows you, Davy says. Pa's read you. He don't know, I say. You don't neither. Davy sneers again.
That's so.
His hand reaches for the cast-iron handle of the door.
Come and meet your new flock, then, Todd Hewitt.
His weight opens the door behind him, and he steps into the paddock and out of the way, giving me a clear view of 100 or more spackle staring right back at me. 4. The Making of a New World. My first thought is to turn and run. Run and run and run and never stop.
I'd like to see that, Davy says, standing inside the gate, smiling like he just won a prize.
There's so many of them. So many long white faces looking back at me. Their eyes too big. Their mouths too small and toothy and high on their faces. Their ears looking nothing like a man's. But you can still see a man's face in there, can't you? Still see a face that feels and fears, and suffers. It's hard to tell which are male and which are female, 'cause they all got the same lichen and moss growing right on their skins for clothing, but there seems to be whole spackle families in there. Larger spacks protecting their spack children, and what must be spack husbands protecting spack wives, arms wrapped around each other, heads pressed close together, and all of them silently, silently.
I know! Davy says. Can you believe they gave the cure to these animals?
They look at Davy now, and a weird clicking starts passing twixt them all, with glances and nods moving along the crowd. Davy raises his pistol and steps farther into the monastery grounds.
Thinking of trying something? He yells. Give me a reason! Go on! Give me a reason!
The spackle huddle closer together in their little groups, backing away from him where they can.
Get in here, Todd, Davy says. We got work to do.
I don't move.
I said get in here. They're animals. They ain't gonna do nothing.
I still don't move.
He murdered one of y'all,
Davy says to the spackle.
Davy, I shout. Cut its head right off with a knife. Sawed and sawed. Stop it.
I run at him to get him to shut his effing mouth. I don't know how he knows, but he knows, and he's gotta shut up right effin' now. The spackle nearest the gate scoot way back at my approach, getting out of my way as fast as they can, looking at me with frightened faces, parents getting their children behind them. I push Davy hard, but he just laughs, and I realize I'm inside the monastery walls now. And I see just how many spackle there are. The stone wall of the monastery surrounds a huge bit of land, but only one little building, some kind of storehouse. The rest is divided up into smaller fields, separated by old wooden fences with low gates. Most of them are badly overgrown, and you can see heavy grass and brambles stretching all the way to the back walls a good 100 yards away. But mostly you can see spackle. Hundreds and hundreds of them spread out over the grounds. Maybe even more than 1,000. They're pushing themselves against the monastery wall, huddling behind the rotting fences, sitting in groups or standing in rows. But all watching me, silent as the grave, as my noise spills out all over the place.
"He's a liar," I say. "It weren't like that. It weren't like that at all."
But what was it like? What was it like that I can explain? 'Cause I did do it, didn't I? Not how Davy said, but nearly as bad and completely as big in my noise. Too big to cover with all their eyes looking back at me. Too big to surround with lies and confuse the truth. Too big to not think about as a crowd of spackle faces just stare.
"It was an accident,"
I say, my voice trailing off, looking from face to weird face, not seeing no pictures of spackle noise, not understanding the clicking they make, so doubly not knowing what's happening.
"I didn't mean it."
But not one of them says a thing back. They don't do nothing but stare. There's a creak as the gate behind us opens up again. We turn to look. It's Ivan from Far Branch, the one who joined the army rather than fight it. And look how right he was. He's wearing an officer's uniform, and he's got a group of soldiers with him.
"Mr. Prentice Jr.," he says, nodding at Davy, who nods back.
Ivan turns to me, a look in his eye I can't read and no noise to be heard.
"It's good to see you well, Mr. Hewitt."
"You two know each other?"
Davy says, sharp-like.
"We've had past acquaintance," Ivan says, still looking at me.
But I ain't saying a word to him. I'm too busy putting up pictures in my noise. Pictures of Far Branch. Pictures of Hildy and Tam and Francia. Pictures of the massacre that happened there. The massacre that didn't include him. A look of annoyance crosses his face.
"You go where the power is," he says. "That's how you stay alive."
I put up a picture of his town burning, men and women and children burning with it. He frowns harder.
"These men will stay here as guards. Your orders are to set the spackle a-clear in the fields and make sure they're fed and watered."
Davy rolls his eyes.
"Well, we know that,"
but Ivan's already turning and heading out the gate, leaving behind 10 men with rifles. They take up stations standing on top of the monastery walls, already getting to work unrolling coils of barbed wire along its edge. 10 men with rifles and us against all these spackle? I say under my breath, but all over my noise.
"Ah, we'll be okay," Davy says.
He raises his pistol at the spackle nearest him, maybe a female, holding a spackle baby. She turns the baby away so her body's protecting it.
"They ain't got no fight in 'em anyway."
I see the face of the spackle protecting her baby. It's defeated, I think. They all are. And they know it. I know how they feel.
"Hey, pig piss, check it out," Davy says.
He raises his arms in the air, getting all the spackle eyes on him.
"People of New Prentice Town," he shouts, waving his arms about, "I read to you your doom." And he just laughs and laughs and laughs.
Davy decides to oversee the spackle clearing the fields of scrub, but that's only 'cause that means I'm the one who'll have to shovel out the fodder from the storehouse for all of them to eat, and then fill troughs for him to drink from. But it's farm work. I'm used to it. All the chores Ben and Killian set me to do in every day. All the chores I used to complain about. I wipe my eyes, and get on with it. The Spackle keep their distance from me as best they can while I work, which, I gotta say, is okay by me. 'Cause I find I can't really look him in the eyes. I keep my head down and carry on shoveling. Davy says his pa told him the Spackle worked as servants or cooks, but one of the mayor's first orders was for everyone to keep them locked away in their homes until the army picked them up last night while I slept. People had them living in their back gardens, Davy says, watching me shovel as the morning turns to afternoon, eating what's supposed to be lunch for both of us. Can you believe that? Like they're effing members of the family. Maybe they were, I say. Well, they ain't no more, Davy says, rising and taking out his pistol. He grins at me. Back to work! I empty most of the storehouse of fodder, but it still don't look like nearly enough. Plus, 3 of the 5 water pumps ain't working, and by sunset, I've only managed to fix one. Time to go, Davy says. I ain't done, I say. Fine, he says, walking toward the gate. Stay here on your own, then. I look back at the Spackle. Now that the workday's through, they push themselves as far away from the soldiers and the front gates as possible. As far away from me and Davy as possible, too. I look back and forth twixt them and Davy leaving. They ain't got enough food. They ain't got enough water. There ain't no place to go to the toilet, and no shelter of any kind at all. I hold out my empty hands towards them, but that don't do no kind of explaining that'll make anything okay. They just stare at me as I drop my hands and follow Davy out the gate. So much for being a man of courage, eh, pig piss? Davy says, untying his horse, which he calls Deadfall, but which only seems to answer to Acorn. I ignore him because I'm thinking about the Spackle. How I'll treat them well. I will. I'll see that they get enough water and food, and I'll do everything I can to protect them. I will. I promise that to myself. 'Cause that's what she'd want. Oh, I'll tell you what she really wants, Davy sneers, and we fight again. New bedding's been put in the tower when I get back. A mattress and a sheet spread out on one side for me, and another on the other side for Mayor Ledger. Already sitting on his, noise jangling, eating a bowl of stew. The bad smell's gone, too. Yes, says Mayor Ledger. And guess who had to clean it up? It turns out he's been put to work as a rubbish man. Honest labor, he says to me, shrugging, but there are other sounds in his grayish noise that make me think he don't believe it's very honest at all. Symbolic, I suppose. I go from the top of the heap to the bottom. It'd be poetic if it weren't so obvious. There's stew for me by my bed, too, and I take it to the window to look out over the town, which is starting to buzz. As the cure leaves the systems of the men of the town, you begin to hear it, from inside the houses and buildings, from down the side streets and behind the trees. Noise is returning to New Prentice Town. It was hard for me to even walk through Old Prentice Town, and that only ever had 146 men in it. New Prentice Town's gotta have 10 times that many, and boys, too. I don't know how I'm gonna be able to bear it. You'll get used to it, Mayor Ledger says, finishing his stew. Remember, I lived here for 20 years before we found a cure. I close my eyes, but all I see is a herd of Spackle looking back at me, judging me. Mayor Ledger taps me on the shoulder and points at my bowl of stew. Are you going to eat that? That night I dream about her. The sun's shining behind her, and I can't see her face, and we're on a hillside, and she's saying something, but the roar of the falls behind us is too loud, and I say, what? And when I reach for her, I don't touch her, but my hand comes back covered in blood. Viola! I say, sitting up on my mattress in the dark, breathing heavy. I look over to Mayor Ledger on his mattress, facing away from me, but his noise ain't sleeping noise. It's the gray-type noise he has when he's awake. I know you're up, I say. You dream quite loud, he says, not looking back. She's someone important? Never you mind. We just have to get through it, Todd, he says. That's all any of us has to do now. Just stay alive and get through it. I turn to the wall. There ain't nothing I can do. Not while they got her. Not while I don't know. Not while they could still hurt her. Stay alive and get through it, I think. And I think of her out there. And I whisper it. Whisper it to her, wherever she is. Stay alive and get through it. Stay alive.
Part 2. House of Healing. 5. Viola wakes.
Calm yourself, my girl.
A voice in the brightness. I blink open my eyes. Everything is a pure white, so bright it's almost a sound, and there's a voice out there in it, and my head is groggy, and there's a pain in my side, and it's too bright, and I can't think. Wait. Wait. He was carrying me down the hill. Just now, he was carrying me down the hill into Haven after... Todd? I say, my voice a rasp, full of cotton and spit, but I run at it as hard as I can, forcing it out into the bright lights, blinding my eyes. Todd?
I said to calm yourself now.
I don't recognize the voice of a woman. A woman. Who are you? I ask, trying to sit up, pushing out my hands to feel what's around me, feeling the coolness of the air, the softness of a bed. I feel panic begin to rise. Where is he? I shout. Todd?
I don't know any Todd, my girl,
the voice says as shapes start to come together, as the brightness separates into lesser brightnesses.
But I do know you're in no shape to be demanding information.
You were shot, says another voice, another woman, younger than the first, off to my right.
Hush your mouth, Madeline Poole,
says the first woman. Yes, Mistress Coyle. I keep on blinking, and I start to see what's right in front of me. I'm in a narrow white bed in a narrow white room. I'm wearing a thin white gown, tied at the back. A woman, both tall and plump, stands in front of me, a white coat with a blue outstretched hand stitched into it, draped over her shoulders, her mouth set in a line, her expression solid. Mistress Coyle. Behind her at the door, holding a bowl of steaming water, is a girl not much older than me. I'm Maddie, says the girl, sneaking a smile.
Out, says Mistress Coyle, without even turning her head. Maddie catches my eye as she leaves, another smile sent my way.
Where am I? I ask Mistress Coyle, my breath still fast.
Do you mean the room, my girl, or the town?
She holds my eyes.
Or indeed the planet.
Please, I say, and my eyes suddenly start to fill with water, and I'm angry about that, but I keep talking. I was with a boy. She sighs and looks away for a second. Then she purses her lips and sits down in a chair next to the bed. Her face is stern, her hair pulled back in plaits so tight you could probably climb them. Her body solid and big and not at all someone who you'd mess around with.
I'm sorry, she says, almost tenderly. Almost. I don't know anything about a boy.
She frowns.
I'm afraid I don't know anything about anything except that you were brought to this house of healing yesterday morning so close to death I wasn't at all sure we would be able to bring you back. Except that we were informed in no uncertain terms that our survival rather depended upon yours.
She waits to see how I take this. I have no idea how I take this. Where is he? What have they done with him? I turn away from her to try and think, but I'm wrapped so tight in bandages around my middle I can't properly sit up. Mistress Coyle runs a couple of fingers across her brow.
And now that you're back, she says, I'm not at all sure you're going to thank us for the world to which we've returned you.
She tells me of Mayor Prentice arriving in Haven in front of the rumor of an army, a big one, big enough to crush the town without effort, big enough to set the whole world ablaze. She tells me of the surrender of someone called Mayor Ledger, of how he shouted down the few people who wanted to fight,
of how most people agreed to let him hand over the town on a plate with a bow tied round it. "And then the houses of healing," she says, real anger coming off her voice, "suddenly became prisons for the women inside." "So you're a doctor, then?" I ask, but all I can feel is my chest pulling in on itself, sinking as if under an enormous weight. Sinking because we failed. Sinking because outrunning the army proved to be of no use at all. Her mouth curls into a small smile, a secret one, like I just let something go. But it's not cruel, and I'm finding myself less afraid of her, of what this room might mean. Less afraid for myself. More afraid for him. "No, my girl," she says, cocking her head. "As I'm sure you know, there are no women doctors on New World. I'm a healer."
"What's the difference?"
She runs her fingers across her brow again. "What's the difference, indeed?" She drops her hands in her lap and looks at them. "Even though we're locked up," she says, "we still hear rumors, you see. Rumors of men and women being separated all over town. Rumors of the army arriving perhaps this very day. Rumors of slaughter coming over the hill to vanquish us all, no matter how well we surrendered." She's looking at me hard now. "And then there's you." I look away from her. "I'm not anyone special." "Are you not?" She looks unconvinced. "A girl whose arrival the whole town has to be cleared for. A girl whose life I am ordered to save on pain of my own. A girl," she leans forward to make sure I'm listening, "fresh from the great black beyond." I stop breathing for a second and hope she doesn't notice. "Where'd you get an idea like that?" She grins again, not unkindly. "I'm a healer. The first thing I ever see is skin, and so I know it well. Skin tells the story of a person, where they've been, what they've eaten, who they are. You've got some surface wear, my girl, but the rest of your skin is the softest and whitest I've seen in my 20 years of doing the good work. Too soft and white for a planet of farmers." I'm still not looking at her. "And then there are the rumors, of course, brought in by the refugees, of more settlers on the way. Thousands of them."
"Please," I say quietly, my eyes welling up again. I try to force them to stop.
"And no girl from New World would ever ask a woman if she was a doctor," she finishes. I swallow. I put a hand to my mouth.
"Where is he? I don't care about any of this, because where is he?"
"I know you're frightened," Mistress Coyle says. "But we're suffering from an excess of fright here in this town, and there's nothing I can do about that." She reaches out a rough hand to touch my arm. "But maybe you can do something to help us." I swallow, but I don't say anything. There's only one person I can trust, and he's not here. Mistress Coyle leans back in her chair. "We did save your life," she says. "A little knowledge could be a large comfort." I breathe in deep, looking around the room, around at the sunlight streaming in from a window looking out onto trees and a river. The river. The one we followed into what was supposed to be safety. It seems impossible that anything bad could be happening anywhere on a day so bright, that there's any danger on the doorstep, that there's an army coming. But there is an army coming. There is. And it won't be any friend to Mistress Coyle, no matter what's happened to... I feel a little pain in my chest. But I take a breath, and I start to talk. "My name," I say, "is Viola Ede."
"More settlers, huh?"
Maddie says with a smile. I'm lying on my side as she unwraps the long bandage around my middle. The underside is covered in blood, my skin dusty and rust-colored where it's dried. There's a little hole in my stomach, tied up with fine string. Why doesn't this hurt? I say. Jeffers root on the bandages, Maddie says. Natural opiate. You won't feel any pain, but you won't be able to go to the toilet for a month either. Plus, you'll be sound asleep in about 5 minutes. I touch the skin around the bullet wound, gently, gently. There's another on my back where the bullet went in. Why aren't I dead? Would you rather be dead? She smiles again, which changes to the smiliest frown I've ever seen. I shouldn't joke. Mistress Coyle's always saying I lack the proper seriousness to be a healer. She dips a cloth in a basin of hot water and starts washing the wounds. You aren't dead because Mistress Coyle is the best healer in all of Haven, better than any of those so-called doctors they've got in this town. Even the bad guys know that. Why do you think they brought you here instead of a clinic? She's wearing the same long white coat as Mistress Coyle, but she's also got on a short white cap with the blue outstretched hand stitched on it, which she told me is something apprentices wear. She can't be more than a year or two older than me, whatever way they measure age on this planet, but her hands are sure, gentle, and firm all around the wounds. So, she says, her voice deceptively light. How bad are these bad guys? The door opens. A short girl in another apprentice cap leans in, young as Maddie but with dark brown skin and a storm cloud hanging over her head. Mistress Coyle says you need to finish up right now. Maddie doesn't look up from taping new bandages to my front. Mistress Coyle knows I've only had time to get halfway done. We've been summoned, says the girl. You say that like we get summoned all the time, Corinne. The bandages are almost as good as the ones I had from my ship, the medicine on them already cooling my torso, already making my eyelids heavy. Maddie finishes on the front and turns to cut another set for my back. I am in the middle of a healing. A man came by with a gun, Corinne says. Maddie stops bandaging. Everyone's been called to the town square, Corinne continues, which includes you, Maddie Poole, healing or not. She crosses her arms hard. I'll bet it's the army coming. Maddie looks me in the eyes. I look away. We'll finally see what our end looks like, Corinne says. Maddie rolls her eyes. Always so cheerful, you, she says. Tell Mistress Coyle I'll be out in 2 ticks. Corinne gives her a sour look but leaves. Maddie finishes up the bandages on my back, by which time I can barely stay awake. You sleep now, Maddie says. It'll be all right, you just watch. Why would they save you if they were going to... She doesn't finish the thought, just scrunches her lips and then smiles. I'm always saying, Corinne's got enough proper seriousness in her for all of us put together. Her smile is the last thing I see before I sleep. Todd! I jolt awake again, the nightmare dashing away, Todd slipping from me. I hear a clunk and I see a book drop from Maddie's lap as she blinks herself awake in the chair by the bed. Night's fallen, and the room is dark, just a little lamp on where Maddie was meant to have been reading.
Who's Todd?
She asks, yawning, already smiling through it.
Your boyfriend?
The look on my face makes her drop the tease immediately.
Someone important?
I nod, still breathing heavily from the nightmare, my hair plastered to my forehead with sweat.
Someone important.
She pours me a glass of water from a pitcher on the bedside table. What happened? I say, taking a drink. You were summoned?
Ah, yes, that, Maddie says, sitting back.
That was interesting. She tells me about how everyone in the entire town, not Haven anymore,
New Prentice Town, a name that makes my stomach sink. Gathered to watch the army march in and watch the new mayor execute the old one.
Except he didn't, Maddie says. He spared him. Said he would spare all of us, too, that he was taking away the noise cure, which the men weren't too happy about, and good Lord, it's been nice not to hear it yammering for the past 6 months, but that we should all know our place and remember who we were, and that we would make a new home together in preparation for all the settlers that were coming. She widens her eyes, waits for me to say something. I didn't understand half of that, I say. There's a cure? She shakes her head, but not to say no. Boy, you really aren't from around here, are you? I set down the glass of water, leaning forward and lowering my voice to a whisper. Maddie, is there a communications hub near here? She looks at me like I just asked her if she'd like to move with me to one of the moons. So I can contact the ships, I say. It might be a big curved dish, or a tower, maybe? She looks thoughtful. There's an old metal tower up in the hills, she says, also whispering. But I'm not even sure it is a communications tower. It's been abandoned for ages. Besides, you won't be able to get to it. There's a whole army out there, Vi. How big? Big enough. We're both still whispering. People are saying they're separating out the last of the women tonight. To do what? Maddie shrugs. Corinne said a woman in the crowd told her they rounded up the spackle, too. I sit up, pressing against the bandages. Spackle? They're the native species here. I know who they are. I sit up even more, straining against the bandage. Todd told me things, told me what happened before. Maddie, if the mayor's separating out women and spackle, then we're in danger. We're in the worst kind of danger. I push back my sheets to get up, but a sudden bolt of lightning rips through my stomach. I call out and fall back. Pull the stitch, Maddie tuts, standing right up. Please. I grip my teeth against the pain. We have to get out of here. We have to run. You're in no position to run anywhere, she says, reaching for my bandage, which is when the mayor walks in the door. 6. Sides of the Story. Mistress Coyle leads him in. Her face is sterner than ever, her forehead creased, her jaw set. Even having only met her once, I can tell she's not happy. He stands behind her. Tall, thin but broad-shouldered. All in white, with a hat he hasn't taken off. I've never properly seen him. I was bleeding, dying when he approached us in the town square. But it's him. It can only be him.
Good evening, Viola, he says. I've been wanting to meet you for a very long time.
Mistress Coyle sees me struggling with the sheet. Sees Maddie reaching for me. Is there a problem, Madeline? Nightmare, Maddie says, catching my eye. I think she pulled a stitch. We'll deal with that later, Mistress Coyle says, and the calm and serious way she says it gets Maddie's full attention. Get her 400 units of Jeffers root in the meantime. 400? Maddie says, sounding surprised, but seeing the look on Mistress Coyle's face, all she says is, Yes, mistress. She gives my hand a last squeeze and leaves the room. They both watch me for a long moment. Then the mayor says,
That'll be all, mistress.
Mistress Coyle gives me a silent look as she leaves, maybe to reassure me, maybe to ask me something or tell me something, but I'm too frightened to figure it out before she backs out of the room, closing the door behind her. And then I'm alone with him. He lets the silence build until it's clear I'm meant to say something. I'm gripping the sheet to my chest with a fist, still feeling the lightning pain fire up my side if I move.
You're Mayor Prentice, I say.
My voice shakes when I say it, but I say it. President Prentice, he says. But you would know me as mayor, of course.
Where's Todd?
I look into his eyes. I do not blink.
What have you done with him?
He smiles again. Smart in your first sentence, courageous in your second. We may be friends yet.
Is he hurt?
I swallow away the burn rising in my chest.
Is he alive?
For a second, it looks like he's not going to tell me. Not even going to acknowledge that I asked, but then he says, Todd is well. Todd is alive and well, and asking about you every chance he gets. I realize I've held my breath for his answer.
Is that true?
Of course it's true.
I want to see him.
And he wants to see you, says Mayor Prentice. But all things in their proper order.
He keeps his smile. It's almost friendly. Here is the man we spent all those weeks running from. Here he is, standing in my very own room where I can barely move from the pain. And he's smiling. And it's almost friendly. If he's hurt, Todd, if he's laid a finger on him. Mayor Prentice.
President Prentice, he says again. Then his voice brightens. But you may call me David.
I don't say anything, just press down harder onto my bandage against the pain. There's something about him, something I can't quite place.
That is, he says, if I may call you Viola.
There's a knock on the door. Maddie opens it, a file in her hand. Jeffers, she says, keeping her eyes firmly on the floor. For her pain.
Yes, of course, the mayor says, moving away from my bed, hands behind his back. Proceed.
Maddie pours me a glass of water and watches me swallow 4 yellow gel caps, 2 more than I've taken before. She takes the glass from me and, with her back to the mayor, gives me a firm look, a solid one. No smile, but all kinds of bravery. And it makes me feel a little bit good, a little bit stronger.
She'll grow tired very quickly,
Maddie says to the mayor, still not looking at him.
I understand,
the mayor says. Maddie leaves, closing the door behind her. My stomach immediately starts to grow warm, but it'll take a minute just yet to make the pain start to go, or take away the quivering running all through me.
So,
the mayor says.
May I?
May you what?
Call you Viola.
I can't stop you, I say, if you want.
Good,
he says, not sitting, not moving, the smile still fixed.
When you are feeling better, Viola, I would very much like to have a talk with you.
About what?
Why, your ships, of course. He says, coming closer by the moment.
I swallow. What ships?
Oh, no, no, no.
He shakes his head but still smiles.
You started out with intelligence and with courage. You are frightened, but that has not stopped you from addressing me with calmness and clarity. All most admirable.
He bends his head down.
But to that we must add honesty. We must start out honestly with each other, Viola. Or how may we proceed at all?
Proceed to where, I think.
I have told you that Todd is alive and well, he says. And what I tell you is true.
He places a hand on the rail at the end of the bed.
And he will stay safe.
He pauses.
And you will give me your honesty. And I understand without having to be told that one depends on the other. The warmth is starting to spread up from my stomach, making everything seem slower, softer. The lightning in my side is fading, but it's taking wakefulness along with it. Why two doses when that would put me to sleep so fast? So fast I won't even be able to talk to... Oh. Oh. I need to see him to believe you, I say.
Soon, he says. There is much to be done in New Prentice Town first. Much to be undone.
Whether anyone wants it or not. My eyelids are getting heavy. I force them up. Only then do I realize I said it out loud. He smiles again.
I find myself saying this with great frequency, Viola. The war is over.
I am not your enemy. I lift my groggy eyes to him in surprise. I'm afraid of him. I am. But you were the enemy of the women of Prentice Town, I say. You were the enemy of everyone in Far Branch. He stiffens a little, though he tries not to let me see it.
A body was found in the river this morning, he says. A body with a knife in its throat.
I try to keep my eyes from widening, even under the Jeffers. He's looking at me close now.
Perhaps the man's death was justified, he says. Perhaps the man had enemies.
I see myself doing it. I see myself plunging the knife. I close my eyes.
As for me,
the mayor says,
the war is over. My days of soldiering are at an end. Now come the days of leadership, of bringing people together.
By separating them, I think, but my breathing is slowing. The whiteness of the room is growing brighter, but only in a soft way that makes me want to fall down into it and sleep and sleep and sleep. I press farther into the pillow.
I'll leave you now, he says. We will meet again.
I begin to breathe through my mouth. Sleep is becoming impossible to avoid. He sees me starting to drift off, and he does the most surprising thing. He steps forward and pulls the sheet straight across me, almost like he's tucking me in.
Before I go,
he says,
I have one request.
What? I say, fighting to keep awake.
I'd like you to call me David.
What? I say, my voice heavy.
I'd like you to say, good night, David.
The Jeffers has so disconnected me that the words come out before I know I'm even saying them. Good night, David. Through the haze of the drug, I see him look a little surprised, even a little disappointed. But he recovers quickly.
And to you, Viola.
He nods at me and steps toward the door to leave. And I realize what it is, what's so different about him.